This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about the book Nature Swagger today. It's a collection of inspiring stories and visions of Black joy in the outdoors. And with us is Rue Mapp. She's the founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro, a national organization that runs workshops, excursions, and leadership training to connect Black people with the power of nature. And she put together all of these essays. Are you a person of color? How are you connecting with nature and encouraging your friends and family to join you? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Rue. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know, I have to take note. We just had the newscast, and that there's a lot of really scary things going on right now, and especially hits home at this time of year. And I happen to think back at the essay that you wrote about the healing that nature gave to you in a spot that was kind of nasty. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, you know, I had the same thought listening just prior to the show and thinking about how now more than ever, we have to embrace nature as this platform for our healing, our release, and also for our connection. And, you know, back in 2014, you know, when cities were erupting after what had happened in Ferguson, I wondered to myself, like, what do I do? How do I show up in this moment as a Black woman leading a Black-focused organization? And the answer came to me, and it was, you do nature, Rue. That is your lane. And the weekend following that revelation, about 30 of us went into the Redwoods in Oakland, California, and did our first healing hike. And as we wound ourselves down into that Redwood bowl where there were no tensions of helicopters overhead and riot gear, we were releasing everything that was on our minds, that was, you know, causing us stress. And I realized we were doing what Black people have always known we could do, and that was to lay down our burdens down by the riverside. And that is, you know, that is something that, you know, our ancestors, you know, gave us as a roadmap that is absolutely relevant to each and every person today. And so I just, you know, I want to plead to all people to go into nature where you can be relieved of all the isms. You know, the trees don't know that I am Black. The flowers are gonna bloom no matter how much money is in my account. The birds sing no matter who I voted for. And so there's a way that I believe nature teaches us how we can be for ourselves, but also with each other.
So true. So true. And I know that the people listening to this appreciate that, because we do have a lot of listeners who are very in tune with nature. So thank you for sharing that with us. That was very encouraging. And we now have time. Go out and take a walk, you know, before you eat, after you eat tomorrow. But let's get back to your book. It's called Nature Swagger. Awesome title. Where did you get that from?
You know, it came from the same source as the title Outdoor Afro. I mean, and it was a funny moment with the publisher, you know, who let me know that they have a process for selecting titles, and, you know, they do the market research and all these things. And I, you know, was asked, like, how attached are you to the title Nature Swagger, which I totally came up with before the book was even near completed. And I said, I'm very attached. That is the title that I want. And everyone seems to connect with it, thankfully. And I think it really embodies a lot of what I've been saying and talking about, especially over recent years, about this desire for more people to have a kind of confidence and ease that is in recognition of nature. And has, you know, this flow that brings change through nature, whether it's seasons or, you know, other markers of time, for more people to be connected with that, I think we can live happier and more joyous lives.
Absolutely. I just love that when you say the word, you just feel like, so yeah, I got nature swagger. So I love it. I loved your introduction also. You're talking about growing up and your dad sounds like a lot like mine actually. But he had a standing invitation. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, we had this hobby farm about 100 miles north of where we lived most of the time in Oakland in Lake County. And we had about 14 acres where we were able to, you know, do all kinds of activities. My dad was a true outdoorsman. He hunted, he fished, and that was, you know, his site of all kinds of outdoor recreation that he shared generously with our family and members of our community. And before people would leave, as people would gather for well wishes and a prayer for safe travels home, he would always tell people, you have a standing invitation. And that meant that once welcomed, you were always welcomed. And that kind of hospitality that leaves people feeling like their cup is full is the kind of hospitality that sits at the heart of everything that I do with Outdoor Afro today. And I think that's really what it's all about, is helping people to understand how welcome they are over and over again in nature experiences.
Yeah, sometimes that's hard to realize for some people. But let's talk about Outdoor Afro and what you do there. And it started as a blog, right? I mean, it started pretty small.
Yeah. I mean, it was literally a kitchen table blog on my heart, where I wanted to tell a new narrative that I didn't see represented in the glossy magazines of the day, of Black people outside in nature as strong, beautiful, and free. And that's how I grew up. And I recognized that I had learned so many lessons over the years. I was an Outward Bound student in my early 20s. I was a Girl Scout. And I understood the power of affinity groups and helping people to feel comfortable and nurtured in their outdoor activities. And so Outdoor Afro was really about me telling the story of growing up the way that I did. And in 2009, at this precipice of social media as we know it today, it was one that was resonant and people responded and told me their stories. And I realized, wow, we actually have this opportunity to shift the visual representation of who we imagine gets outside and leads outside. And since that blog, we've grown to a national not-for-profit organization. We have networks in over 30 states, over 50 cities, and a participation network of about 60,000 people who are getting out, hiking, biking, camping, you name it, with us. And it's really been a joy to see this kind of pop-up family reunion occur in cities all over the country. And I'm proud to say that we are in Wisconsin, we are in Madison and Platteville. And those have been long-standing networks where people are getting out and doing things. They've definitely got some things planned this weekend, so I hope folks look them up. But yeah, it's absolutely a way that I've been able to turn my life's experience into something that is a standing invitation for everyone.
That's lovely. And obviously there was a need and a want for what you were doing, and you were in the right place at the right time with the right idea. So that's great. And what is the email address so people do want to look to see how they can meet up with folks?
Yeah, go to outdoorafro.org and you will see everything that we have going up, lots of inspiring images and stories, as well as how to find your local network. And then you can follow us on all of our social channels too. And people always ask, like, you know, if I'm not a Black person, am I welcome? And everyone is welcome who just supports what we're doing. Please come and join us. And it is really a wonderful way to meet new people and to support new people in their outdoor experiences.
Okay. And we'll definitely put that link on our page. So you just have to go to WPR.org/Larry, look for this show, and there'll be a link right under the description so you can go directly, although it's not hard to find if you Google it. So I think we're good. Let's get back to your book. What a great idea to have all these essays. Where did that come from?
Well, for me, I'd always loved writing. I had a Hello Kitty diary when I was a little girl, and I used to write in my painstaking loopy cursive about my outdoor experiences, especially those with the Girl Scouts. And so for me, this felt like a diary all grown up. But the added bonus was that it didn't have to only have my voice. There were so many people I had met over the years. And I really wanted to provide a platform and a showcase of everyday voices in the outdoors. Now, some people who are in the book are accomplished in their fields, but I really wanted this book to be accessible to as many people as possible and as many types of readers as possible. Our youngest contributor was only 9 years old at the time of printing, and our eldest is 99. In fact, Miss Betty just turned 100 last week. And the stories that they tell and the photos that they share are aligned with the work that I've been doing over the last decade of shifting that visual representation and really lifting up the widest range of possibilities that people can think about connections to nature that are not just about those summit experiences, although there are a few of those, but also talk about people who look out their windows and notice what's happening in their garden, or people who choose, hunting and angling as a lifestyle. And so I really was hoping to create the broadest representation in every way I could through the voices of people, many of whom I've gotten to know and have become friends over these last years.
And they were interesting and inspiring to read. But those two you picked out were especially, for me, inspiring in that little 9-year-old, 10-year-old talking about learning to swim. Oh, talk about tugging at your heartstrings, right?
Yes.
Well, we're talking with Rue Mapp. She is founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro, a national organization that runs workshops, excursions, and leadership training to connect Black people with the power of nature. Her new book is called Nature Swagger. How has interacting with nature changed your life? Join by calling 800-642-1234. Our on-air producer today is Tyler Ditter, and Clara Neipert is our on-air producer, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. I got that mixed up, but thank you. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Najel. Keep listening with us. After 11:45, we're going to talk about agroforestry. It's a really cool new system about putting trees and shrubs mixed up with farming. But right now, we're talking about this great new book called Nature Swagger. And Rue, I love the four sections you divided the book into. Did the essays just fall into those categories for you, or did you specifically want to fill those?
That's a great question, because I understood that I wanted to break up the essays in thematic sections, but I really had to wait to see what the writers would share with me. And the process was so joyous because, you know, not everyone thinks of themselves as a writer. And so for some people, it was a conversation that I was able to transcribe. For others, it was an interview. And then some people wrote their own essays, and we really broke up the themes in a way that really aligned with what people were sharing with me around their emotions in the outdoors. So it's not a book that has like, here's the hiking section or here's the biking section. You know, the sections include, you know, homecoming, hands on the land, in the name of joy. And in that way, you know, I was able to really tap into what the emotional weight and motivation of the contributor offered. And it was lovely how it worked out that the sections were relatively equally divided. And there are places where some of our contributors pop up in ways that you might not expect until after you read, you'll understand why they landed where they did.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's not a how-to book. It's more of a why book, why to get out in nature and what it can do for you. So very inspiring, like I said. Tell us about some of the stories in the homecoming section. That's the first one. Are there any that really stand out?
Well, the one that opens is really special to me because, you know, I've been talking about the story of growing up with my family and the family unity contribution by Robin Johnson is the childhood friend who we shared the ranch experience with. Her father was my father's best friend. And it was so lovely to actually have her perspective of what growing up and visiting that ranch meant to her and her family. And it was a wonderful trip down memory lane. And you'll see photographs that are, you know, clearly from the 70s that are scanned and included in the section. But, you know, homecoming was really so much about, you know, how people think about gathering and being with family and how nature is often a very powerful backdrop for those experiences to happen.
For sure. And it's always nice to get another perspective about your upbringing and what it was like when you were young. And you know, we're talking about pictures, and the pictures are wonderful. What did you really want to bring across when you chose the pictures you did?
Well, I really wanted to convey beauty because so much, you know, of the story of Black people in nature has been rooted in peril and pain. And I really wanted to locate this book in joy, because it's so much easier to generate energy and motivation from joyous representation. And I also recognize that this book is a tribute to not only the people, but also a proud history of Black people connecting to nature that's lesser known. You know, I think about the darkest times for Black Americans in this country in recent years that include, you know, those Jim Crow laws with signs that said you can't swim here, you can't vacation here, you can't be at this beach, and the list goes on. But even through that time, there were people so determined to connect to nature that they built their own places, their own havens, such as Oak Bluffs and Martha's Vineyard and Lake Ivanhoe and Lincoln Hills. And these are places where people found both their joy and their justice. And it's a story that I'm so thankful that we get to build on today and imagine how we can create those experiences, even informally, in our lives going forward.
Yes. And I learned so much reading these essays and finding out about these places that, you know, it just was never talked about. It was never told to people. So it's really, really nice to hear those. And, you know, I really enjoyed the section that you called Hands on the Land, growing up in a rural farming area. Tell us about those essays.
Yeah, I mean, Hands on the Land really speaks to people who are gardening, who are hunting, or who had a very intimate and tactile connection to the land. You know, sustenance is one that shows up from Jonathan Wilkins. And he's a very interesting and brilliant gentleman out of Arkansas, who converted a old church into a hunting lodge. And, you know, just hearing about his why of hunting and what it does for him and how it helps define his place in the world, how he is able to connect his hunting activities and teach those activities to his family is so inspiring. And it's just another viewpoint that people don't get to see. They don't get to hear about the real love story that is the undercurrent of when people are able to actually put their hands in dirt and help people to, you know, garden or to cultivate bees. And so this section is really important to me as someone who also hunts and fishes. And I wanted to bring forth a different and more diverse representation of what those activities might look like and their meaning behind them in people's everyday lives.
And we do seem to, there's this idea that people of color, especially Black people, aren't connected with nature, like you say. What are some of the reasons why it's just not told?
Well, you know, I think that there's definitely some hangover from those times and eras where there was real prohibition. But I think that, you know, when I got into Outdoor Afro's work more deeply and we had enough people to be a good sample size, I asked the question, like, if you want to get outside, what's keeping you from getting outside? And there were a few reasons that bubbled up to the surface. One was gear and equipment. Like, it's completely overwhelming to know what to buy, what you already have at home might be useful. So, like, parsing all that out was really overwhelming for a lot of people, on top of the investment, obviously, that you have to make. Transportation is an issue. You know, if you can't get to a place with a reliable car, or if public transportation's not there, it's pretty overwhelming to consider how you might get yourself and the things you need to a particular nature place. So having support, you know, like people in your family or friends or a network who can be your mentors or your guides or a support system was also an issue. And then fears and perceptions, fears about, you know, wildlife, fears about things that might bite you or harm you. And sometimes fears of other people, like, am I going to be welcome in a place that I go to that I've never been before? But the number one reason, which I found to be universal, is time. Mm. Most working families just don't have a way of sometimes fitting nature experiences into their busy lives. On the, you know, weekends, even, you might even have to work, or you have time with grandma or the honey-do list or worship services, football, you name it. And so busy working families have a real challenge of thinking of how to connect to nature. And so what I wanted to offer through this book, and what we do through our work over these years, is to provide nice, reasonable chunks for people to engage with outdoor experiences. That 2-hour hike or bird walk, for instance, and having those opportunities be located close to where people live. And overall, just helping people realize that nature is not someplace over there. Like, nature connections start right in your own backyard, even through your kitchen window, looking at the backyard. There's so much to notice and be inspired about. And so I'm very conscious of how we can help shape and help people rethink connections to nature that are less intimidating, more informed, and giving people the confidence to be their own leaders in their own families. I mean, that's where I learned it. I learned it from my family. And so one big goal for Outdoor Afro is really to help restore that sense of outdoor leadership back to the home.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. What are some other ways that maybe like our park systems could be a little bit more welcoming to everyone?
Well, I would say, like, especially in the last decade of work, where I've had the privilege of sitting on a number of advisory boards, both national and local, you know, groups that have all together moved the needle in some significant ways around welcoming. I recommend for anyone, if you don't want to get out with Outdoor Afro, because, you know, that of course is always an option, check out your local parks systems, your local parks, your state parks, your regional parks, even your national parks. They have some incredible programming with highly trained professionals who can curate experiences for all ages and all interests. And so you don't have to get out here and figure it out on your own. There are so many more opportunities available today than ever before. And I would say that at the heart of so many of them is the spirit of welcoming. And they're ready for you with open arms to come out and enjoy these natural resources that we all pay for. We all pay for
it. Exactly.
So,
right.
You know, we're all equally owners in these resources, and we should use them, because I believe that if you don't use them, if you're not aware of your public lands, from that pocket park to your, you know, wild, you know, vista out there, that you will not come to care for it. And I believe that everyone needs to be in good relationship with our natural resources in order to be good stewards of those resources. And I think that, you know, when we consider what the long game is, it means that, you know, we'll have a more engaged and educated public when it comes to making decisions about how these natural resources get to be maintained.
The more the better, obviously. Power in numbers. We are talking about bringing people out into nature. And our guest is Rue Mapp. She is the founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro. And she's got this great new book out called Nature Swagger. You should get it. Or maybe just get it for someone for Christmas or for whatever holiday you celebrate coming up. That would be great. But we'd like to hear your stories, too. So give us a call, 800-642-1234. What has nature done for you or for your family? We'd like to hear your stories. So, or you can give us an email too, 800, or that's the phone number, ideas at WPR.org. That is our email. You know, in one part of the book, you did talk about the Sierra Club and how there's been definitely a history of racism in that particular organization and other environmental groups over the years. You know, their founder, John Muir, was not exactly the most open person in the world. How do we overcome that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really important, you know, bit of history to know about. And I've struggled with learning about some of these histories and what they mean for us today. And I'm really pleased by the ways that the folks who are a part of, you know, what I like to call these heritage environmental organizations, the people who are a part of them today, leading them today, are also trying to tell a new narrative. And, you know, the people who founded, you have to think about, you know, the times they were in, the prevalent beliefs at that time. You know, were something that, you know, is rooted in that particular time. And that today, you know, there are so many more organizations on top of those organizations that are doing an incredible job with welcoming and helping more people to recognize that, you know, these nature experiences are for everyone. And that's really what Outdoor Afro was born from. You know, we were born from this idea that, hey, if we're not seeing what we want out there through other organized groups, let's create our own. And like I said, I've been a big fan of affinity groups. You know, when I was a new mom in the San Francisco Bay Area, I sought a new mom's group in that area because that's where I was going to, you know, learn about highly relevant information for what I needed at the time. The Girl Scouts is another example. And so I feel like today we have so many choices of groups that we can align with that can really be our training wheels for us to build our confidence and get out in nature on our own terms.
Mm-hmm. And the Scouts is a really good organization for getting kids involved in nature and getting out to areas where they may not have been able to get them before. Tell us a little bit more about your organization and what you have on your website, the resources and things that you have for Outdoor Afro.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that has become, you know, more and more important over the years is leadership development. And so we offer an opportunity for people to become volunteer Outdoor Afro leaders. And this year's class, we have nearly 120 men and women from all over who we teach the best practices for risk management, for trip planning and logistics, communication and policy, and the list goes on. And by giving people that knowledge, they're able to go into their local communities and lead people with confidence into the outdoors, really leaning into the local resources, the local vernacular. And it's been a way for us to really help ordinary people see themselves as outdoor leaders. And we also spend a lot of time talking about history. You heard me earlier talking about the history of Black recreation in the United States and the overcoming testimony that was. But also, there's so many more stories out there. And so we not only get people outside, but we also talk about the stories of Black people in these places that are sometimes not on the official placard, but because of the resources and research that our volunteers are able to locate, we're able to, you know, help people cultivate a sense of pride and connection through those stories. And then the most recent initiative that we've done that has been really near and dear to my heart has been our Learn to Swim program. And sadly, Black children are drowning at 5 times the rate of their white counterparts, ages 5 through 19. And I had heard so many stories of not only children who were drowning, but sometimes the caregivers going into the pools and waterways after them also drowning, which was just a complete heartbreak. But also I recognize as our inheritance of those Jim Crow policies that prohibited Black people from accessing public pools for a significant number of years. And so today we have a swim program that provides monies to swim lesson providers. And it is our goal to teach every child in our sphere of influence how to swim. Because I know that if a child doesn't know how to swim, they're not going to ease into a tippy kayak or cast a pole in a lazy lake. And they're certainly not going to care about plastic in the ocean. And so everyone needs to be in good relationship with water to save our you know, lives, but also to be able to save and preserve the natural resource that water is for our planet.
And speaking of kayaks, tell us a story about you and your sister.
Yeah. So, you know, my sister, you know, she's not that much of an outdoors person. She's much older than I am. And, you know, we are very close and had the beauty and just this lovely experience being in Martha's Vineyard a couple of summers ago. And, you know, we were invited by our guests to go and enjoy the kayaks and the little, you know, waterway behind their place. And I realized based on where the water was, that the tide was fairly low and too low from where we were standing to get into the kayaks comfortably. But I had to figure out how to do it. And it was one of those moments where I asked myself, I'm like, wow, if I can't get my sister in this kayak, I'm probably in the wrong profession. But we managed to come up with a hack that folks can read about. And we got into that kayak and paddled to the other side and had a moment of playfulness and joy together as sisters that was made possible by being able to get through our challenge and experience this beautiful place. And so, you know, that's just another example of how anyone, you know, you can be a wilderness or outdoor recreation leader for people in your own family who trust you and who look to you. And, you know, and in the case of my, you know, older sister, you know, I was definitely able to support her to experience something really joyous for the both of us.
That's a good idea for people even in your neighborhood who, if you're an outdoors person and your neighbor's not, ask them to come with you. Do something simple, though. Nothing too complicated,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. And you know, and think about, you know, just keeping it in a joyous frame. You know, sometimes when we think about hikes, we think about work, or when we think about camping, we think about hardship, you know, and there's so many different ways that you can approach either of those activities and others that are easy, that are fun and accessible to anyone.
Mm-hmm. I probably got to do a shout out to some of the parks in this area, too, that offer so many classes, a botanical gardens in particular, that they're free. And all you have to do is get there and they teach you about all kinds of different things. So that's another good place to check out. If there's just one thing that you want readers to take away from Nature Swagger, what is it?
Joy. Hands down, joy. I want to know that people open those sections with a smile on their face. I want people also to feel connected and be inspired to write their own story, to share their own stories. And I think right before, you know, the holiday season is a good time for people to think about their own nature journey or their own family histories in nature and bring those stories to the table where families gathered around and lift up those histories so that we don't forget about, you know, grandpa's affinity for fishing or about grandmother's garden and all the wonderful meals that she made. And so I'm hopeful that this book will just be one way for people to find not only greater connections to nature, but those stories in their own families that center them.
And write them down or record them so that future generations can appreciate them too. And then for any outdoor enthusiast who's maybe struggling with feeling like they don't belong or aren't welcome in an outdoor space, what would you say to them to encourage them?
Well, find a group. You know, it's so important. Like I've said before, you know, find your group. It could be a family group. It could be a church group. It could be the Scouts. It could be Outdoor Afro. There are so many affinity groups that didn't even exist in 2009 when I first got started that now there's no excuse for not getting out and finding your group of people to connect with. It might be a local mom's group where, you know, people have their tots and strollers and in backpacks, but find your group because there's so much that is shared that is beyond the scope of where you might be in nature. It is about connecting with people and their stories. And I can tell you some of the people who have become my lifelong friends are people who I have shared nature experiences with, sometimes over and over years. And so to me, it's not just about getting in nature, but also how we can connect with one another in it.
Well said. And thank you so much, Rue, for being with us today. You are a joy and your book is a joy. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Jill, for having me, and happy Thanksgiving.
And to you, too. We have been talking with Rue Mapp. She's the founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro and author of the new book, Nature Swagger. Well, stay with us on the Ideas Network because we're going to be right back to take a closer look at agroforestry.